This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from The Way of Health, a nonprofit health clinic emphasizing internal medicine, including some, including special programs for mental health issues such as depression or anxiety. Also Chinese medicine and acupuncture. The Way of Health is located at the corner of Southeast Market at 106th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-788-4165. Okay, wrong theme song. Sorry, Dr. Naaman. How about that? The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naaman, your host. Today's guest is Dr. Nisa Goldberg. Dr. Goldberg is a cardiologist and chief of women's cardiac care at Lenox Hill Hospital. Dr. Goldberg is also clinical assistant professor of medicine at NYU. Dr. Nisa Goldberg is medical director of the cardio rehab program at the 92nd Street Y in New York and has served on the board of directors of the American Heart Association in New York City. She has published many heart disease-related research studies in journals such as the American Journal of Cardiology, and Dr. Goldberg is here on Health Watch to talk about her book, The Woman's Healthy Heart Program, Life-Saving Strategies for Preventing and Healing Heart Disease. If you'd like to join the conversation here, the number is 503-231-8187. Welcome to Health Watch, Dr. Goldberg.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, you originally published this book under a different title, under the title Women Are Not Small Men. Can you explain that to our listeners?
4 years ago, when I published the first edition of this book, I entitled it Women Are Not Small Men. And that was really to gain attention to the fact that women's heart disease can be very different than men's and is often underrecognized and undertreated. But now, 4 years later, in its new edition, I've retitled it to the Women's Healthy Heart Program because I no longer have to shock women that heart disease is the leading killer of women. In fact, studies from the American Heart Association have shown over the last 10 years that women's heart disease awareness has increased. So what I wanted to do was to focus on an educational program about women and heart disease that women can understand, give them the information so that when they go to their doctor's visits, they can get an efficient visit where their heart disease risk factors are evaluated, but also to give them a program that could work for them in terms of reducing their risk for heart disease.
I found it really interesting in your book about you cited some surveys of conceptions that women have about their own health and what they believe that they have the highest risk of dying from. And it sounds like that may have changed over the last 5 years, but I did find it fascinating that most women thought that they would die of breast cancer or ovarian cancer, but the risk of heart disease is actually, of dying of heart disease is much, much greater.
Right. When you actually ask women about what they think is the greatest health threat to women in general, they'll always say heart disease. But when you go to the average woman and ask her what she thinks her greatest health threat will be, only 13% of women surveyed actually believed it was their heart. They would more likely think that their own personal health greatest health threat was breast cancer.
Well, given that until recently a lot of the studies on heart disease were done on men, What are the ways in which we're finding out that heart disease presents differently in women?
Firstly, we've learned recently that the symptoms of heart attack can be different in women. Instead of the 165-pound man that we all saw as the heart attack in medical school, women can have heart attacks, but they may have shortness of breath, unexplained fatigue, pressure lower down in the chest. And sometimes these symptoms come on in less intensity than they would the day of the heart attack, about 6 weeks before the heart attack. And that was some important research that's been done in the last 2 years. So that, in fact, if a woman is generally very in tune to her body and knows when things are different. So if you are a woman and you're doing your usual activities, maybe it's cleaning your house or walking the dog, and find out that you're a little bit more breathless and it's new, or you have to take a break while you're cleaning your house, which some of my patients tell me when they come in to have their symptoms evaluated, then that's the time to go to the doctor to get an evaluation, because then we can do testing for your risk factors such as cholesterol and blood pressure and even a stress test to assess your fitness and whether or not these symptoms are brought on by exertion. But it's the day of the heart attack, these symptoms are so intense that you can experience them at rest, or they can even wake you up from your sleep, and oftentimes you're sweating and feel lightheaded. That's the time to call 911. I think the important point is that women have to know about all the possible symptoms of a heart attack, because we find that 2/3 of the women in our country who have heart attacks never make it to the hospital, and 90% of them have at least one risk factor that we can treat, like high blood pressure or high cholesterol.
And I imagine maybe this is changing over time too, but I would imagine that because the symptoms for women can be very different, they're not the classic chest pain and radiation down the left arm, that their symptoms could get dismissed by their doctor as being anxiety or nerves.
Yes, in fact, one of the stories I often share is one of my patients that I had when I first started practicing. I was a faculty member at my medical school at that time, and a woman who worked at the medical school was in the coronary care unit, and I was shocked to see her in the bed. And when she told me her medical story, I was even more shocked. She told me that she had been to 4 doctors because she had complained of breathlessness. And the first doctor told her she was stressed out. The second doctor told her to take a vacation. A third doctor told her that she needed to sign up for yoga. And a fourth one gave her a prescription for Valium. While she was in the hospital, we found out she did not have a heart attack, but she went for an angiogram, the study that looks at the arteries itself using X-ray pictures and dye, and we found that she had a 99% blockage in the artery that supplied the front part of her heart muscle. So clearly these were symptoms that were missed. Luckily for her, she hadn't had a heart attack, but it's clear that we really need to be more vigilant in terms of the medical community about about assessing all the symptoms in women and not to necessarily write off something as stress. I think also one of the studies that was recently published that I actually discuss in my book was the fact that the physiology of women's heart disease can be completely different. We're all looking for that big buildup of plaque in the arteries that supply the heart muscle, and that's when we do those high-tech tests like the coronary angiogram. Yet we find that there may be as many as 3 million women in our country who have a different form of heart disease that puts them at risk for heart attack, but may be invisible to this test. And that's because the blockages occur in the blood vessels that are embedded in the heart. We call them the secondary blood vessels. And that's why it's very important that in the doctor's office that women are really assertive and give the doctor their heart history and say, I'm just not feeling well, whether your symptoms are chest discomfort or shortness of breath. And oftentimes we can make the diagnosis that there's a blockage somewhere and not necessarily can tell you exactly where by the stress test, because that allows us to actually objectively assess how far a woman can go in terms of her fitness, but also see if the exercise itself can provoke the symptoms.
We're talking today with Dr. Nisa Goldberg about her book, The Women's Healthy Heart Program. If you'd like to join the conversation here on Health Watch, the number is 503-231-8187. So I'm sure we've captured the attention of a lot of women out there today about the fact that our conceptions around heart attacks in women is quite different than reality. How can women go about assessing their own personal risk for heart disease? And where should they start in trying to figure out what their actual risk is?
Well, they can make an appointment with their healthcare provider, and that may be their internal medicine doctor, their primary care physician, or a cardiologist to really see where they are on the scale of heart health. What are their risk factors? They should also come in with a list of questions. If you're having a symptom, then you should make sure you bring that up in the visit with the doctor. So that could really direct what kind of tests need to be done. But very important for the woman is to make sure she leaves that visit with a plan for how she can reduce her risk for heart disease. For instance, you can ask the doctor, will my cholesterol be checked today? Get a blood test for your glucose to evaluate your risk for diabetes, in addition to the fact that your blood pressure is going to be checked on the standard visit. If you're a smoker, don't feel embarrassed about bringing it up. I think if you've considered quitting, you really need to have someone to work with you on that, since women find it very difficult to quit smoking, and clearly it is one of the preventable risk factors. In my own practice, and as I discuss in the book, I use anything from patches or nicotine spray as well as medications and even hypnosis, depending upon what's right for the particular woman to get her to quit smoking.
I know that the guidelines for screening are an evolving science. And what right now do you recommend to your patients around at what age they should start checking their cholesterol and their blood pressure and so on?
A woman should get her first cholesterol test when she's in her 20s. In fact, in my book, I organized what women should be doing at each stage of her life, 30s, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. Most young women aren't even thinking about their heart health. And unfortunately, that's a problem because the largest group of smokers, largest group of women beginning to smoke are young women. But guidelines have been around for a long time that actually recommends that women get their first cholesterol testing when they're in their 20s. And that's sort of a way to begin to look to follow your heart disease risk factors throughout your life. Now, in a young woman who's found to have high cholesterol, before we jump to treating it with medications, we really need to get a good history on that woman to find out what things may be raising her cholesterol. Is it a family history? Is it genetic? Does the woman have an underactive thyroid? Having an underactive thyroid actually increases your cholesterol. Are you on medications like prednisone that can increase your cholesterol? And then what is more common in many healthy women is that they're on oral contraceptives, birth control pills. And some of those oral contraceptives may raise your cholesterol. So ideally, it's important before you go into the before you take that prescription from the gynecologist that you get your blood pressure and cholesterol measured. We find that women who have risk factors when they take oral contraceptives are at higher risk of heart attack. The medication itself does not increase risk for heart disease, but if you have risk factors, your heart disease risk is increased.
Well, you mentioned birth control pills, and I know there's also been a lot of controversy around hormone replacement therapy and heart disease. Could you speak to that for our listeners?
Well, now we're talking about women in a different age group, and those are menopausal women. For many years, it was thought that hormone therapy was one-stop shopping for women's health, a sort of fountain of youth, that it reduced risk for heart disease, helped menopausal symptoms, and reduced risk for osteoporosis. But since 2002, we have learned that hormone therapy does not reduce risk for heart disease. The Women's Health Initiative has shown that women who are either on estrogen or a combination of estrogen and progesterone, that they do not have a lower risk of heart disease. In fact, they have a higher risk of heart attack and stroke if they're on the hormones. So that hormone therapy is very effective for menopausal symptoms, and it does reduce risk for osteoporosis, but it is not used for prevention of heart disease.
We're talking today with Dr. Nisa Goldberg, the author of the Women's Healthy Heart Program. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 503-231-8187. Well, one of your more fascinating sections of your book, Dr. Goldberg, was the section on stress, emotions, and the heart. And I would love if you'd share some of that information. I know that in popular parlance, people think about their heart and depression and anxiety, but there's actual studies showing relationships between heart disease and emotions and stress.
Right. It's taken a long time to realize that stress can really break your heart. And since Valentine's Day is coming, I think people think of broken hearts in maybe other ways, but stress really takes its toll on your heart. In fact, stress hormones such as adrenaline raise your heart rate and blood pressure. Women who are chronically stressed have higher blood pressure. Additionally, studies have shown that some women who are exposed to a really stressful event, like loss of a loved one, change of a job, or change of a home situation, some women actually have sudden heart failure, a sudden weakening of their heart muscle, sending them into the hospital, and they find that they have not had a heart attack, but their muscle is weakened. Luckily, after a few weeks, the muscle goes back to normal, but it is associated with high levels of stress hormones. Additionally, cortisol, another stress hormone, makes your blood vessels vulnerable to the buildup of cholesterol. It is also a hormone that's associated with depositing fat around the middle, and we now know that your waist size is very important in terms of your heart disease risk. For instance, women who have an increased waist size, more than 35 inches, have a higher risk of heart disease than women who have a smaller waist size.
And you also mentioned that social isolation can play a role in terms of longevity post-heart attack.
That's right. You know, one of the things that I consider very important in my practice and also I recommend to women is really to identify what your support system is. Women who are able to identify a supportive network, and if they have a heart attack, but if they have a supportive network after that heart attack, have less complication after their heart attack. So if you're a woman who's had a heart attack and has very little social support, you have a higher complication rate after a heart attack. And a support network can be your friends, your family members, even the people that you have at church. So it's very important to be supportive. We also learn that women who have lack of support either in the home or in the workplace have a higher rate of first heart disease. So these are women who may not have yet had heart disease, but if they're in an environment that is not supportive, they have a higher rate of heart attack.
Well, let's take a caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Hello. Do women or people that have, I guess it's mostly women, fibromyalgia, does that affect the heart more, too? And also, what do you think about aspirin and nitroglycerin in caring for the heart or preventing heart attack, whatever it's supposed to do? I'll listen to you.
Okay, I think those are great questions. First of all, having fibromyalgia, which is a condition where women have muscle fatigue and aren't able to exercise as vigorously because of muscular and bone pain, fibromyalgia itself is not a risk factor for heart disease. Certainly, there are women who have heart disease and also fibromyalgia. So, I would tell a woman who has fibromyalgia that alone doesn't increase your risk for heart disease, but you should have your risk factors checked out. Aspirin is something else that's really come up in the medical literature as well as in the press. And who should take aspirin? Does aspirin benefit women? And I always say that aspirin benefits the women who need it the most. In fact, women who are healthy over the age of 65, if they take an aspirin a day, it reduces their risk for heart attack and stroke. Women who've already had a heart attack, studies have shown that an aspirin a day does reduce your risk of a second heart attack. We also recommend aspirin for women who are at high risk for heart disease, and in particular, those are women who have diabetes. So if you're a diabetic woman, you should ask your doctor about whether or not aspirin is right for you, in addition to women who may have a few risk factors. Nitroglycerin is a medication we use to take care of angina or chest discomfort secondary to a blocked artery of the heart. That medication works to relieve symptoms, but it's not a medication for prevention of heart disease.
We're talking today with Dr. Nisa Goldberg, the author of the Women's Healthy Heart Program. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number here is 503-231-8187. In your book, Dr. Goldberg, you also mention a model called the Heart Belief Model. Can you explain what that is to us?
Well, the health belief model is a model, a medical model, where in order to get a person to personally reduce their risk of a condition such as heart disease, that they have to believe that they're at risk for it. So that the more you believe that you have a risk for heart disease, the more likely you will to start taking steps to reduce your risk, like exercise or dieting, or going to the doctor just for a check on your risk factors.
Well, one of the most contentious areas, it seems, in medicine these days is nutrition. And I know just recently last week a big study came out around low-fat diets and risk for heart disease and cancer. And I was curious what your thoughts were both on that study and in general how you sift through a lot of potentially contradictory information about how to eat and heart disease.
Well, first of all, there are different reasons that people want to know how to eat. Some of it's to reduce risk for heart disease, and diet alone does not reduce your risk for heart disease. I think that study was started a long time before we actually made recommendations to people with and without heart disease that really a good diet for your heart is one that has good nutrients from all food groups. We focus more on taking out the bad fats, like the trans fats that are found in processed foods, particularly on the food label. If you see the word hydrogenated, that's equivalent to trans fat. Also reducing the intake of saturated fat that's found in beef and eggs and whole fat dairy products and butter. And really to focus on the good fats, like the monounsaturated fats that are in olive and canola oil, polyunsaturated fats like the omega-3s found in fish. Even including nuts, a handful of nuts that like almonds or walnuts that really have a more favorable balance of the good fats. And really whole grains, what happened is in the past, whenever we recommended a low-fat diet, people tended to bulk up on their diet with a lot of high-calorie, low-fat food items, and those were predominantly carbohydrates, simple sugars, starches. Sometimes, you know, that old episode of Seinfeld where the people were gaining weight on the low-fat muffins. It's because the muffin was so big and it was made with carbohydrates. So we really need to focus on a balanced diet, which is what I recommend in the Women's Healthy Heart Program. And one of the eating plans that I recommend is the Mediterranean-style diet, which has the good fats and fruits, vegetables, and whole grains.
And so with regards to this latest study, do you have any thoughts specifically on the results that came out?
I'm not surprised. I think, first of all, in the study, if you look at it very closely, the women in the study were not really able to lower their fat very much at all, and certainly sticking with that very low-fat diet was a problem. So that it's not just about the fat. In order to reduce risk of heart disease, you really need a comprehensive program that includes taking in looking at how many total calories you have. Because in order to lose weight, you need to actually take in fewer calories and burn off more. And I think that when it comes to an eating plan, it has to be well balanced.
Well, let's skip ahead to exercise regimes. I think that's an area that especially people who've had a heart event are really tentative about exercise. They're scared of potentially doing the wrong type or triggering another event. And How do you counsel people around the ideal type of exercise to do, both in terms of prevention and maybe around recovery as well?
Well, in recovery, I always discuss and encourage the woman to go to cardiac rehabilitation, which is an organized program of exercise, nutritional counseling, and stress management covered by most health insurance plans. And there, right after your heart attack or your heart surgery, you're in an exercise class where there are other people who share the fact that they have heart disease as well, and you're hooked up to a heart monitor and supervised by a nurse, and there's a doctor on the premises. And so that's a nice way to get back into an exercise program if you've been in, if you've exercised before, or like many of the women I see, it's the first time they've exercised, and it gives you a lot more confidence to go in that direction. So clearly, if you've had a heart attack, when the doctor starts writing you the prescription for the cholesterol medicine and tells you to take the aspirin, please do ask about referral to cardiac rehabilitation if they don't bring it up. In terms of prevention for women who have not yet had heart disease, I think it's very important to figure out who this woman is, the total woman, and what kind of life she's living. You know, does she work both outside the home and take care of the family? What is her time like? Because I like to try to fit in exercise programs that work with a woman's life. Otherwise, she will not be able to participate. Certainly, living in New York City, walking programs are very popular because it's the fastest way to get around town. And a moderate paced walk actually reduces a woman's risk for not only heart disease, but also type 2 diabetes. So I wouldn't underestimate the power of walking. Additionally, there are options that I give women that I take care of, such as using exercise videotapes or joining a gym. But clearly it's important for a woman to get at least 30 minutes of aerobic activity a day and to do it regularly, because that is associated with lower risk of heart disease.
Dr. Goldberg, let's try to squeeze in one last call before the end of the show.
Okay, sure.
Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Yes, you mentioned the need to be concerned about belly fat and gaining some abdominal girth, and also how that and stress contribute to heart disease. Now, there's a lot of products on the air right now that they mention on TV and radio that are supposed to reduce, I think it is the cortisol hormone. Are these products that we should avoid and just stick to a better diet and more exercise? Or do these products help kind of like aspirin does?
Those products have not been shown to help the way aspirin helps in terms of reduced heart disease risk. And a good way to reduce the fat accumulation around the middle is actually to reduce your carb intake. Really be careful about how much white bread and pasta you're taking in and how many sweets, and also to combine that with aerobic exercise.
Dr. Goldberg, do you have any last thoughts for our listeners today?
Yes, in honor of Heart Month, if a woman who's listening hasn't had her heart risk factors checked out, she should call and make an appointment.
And where can people find your book, The Women's Healthy Heart Program?
The book is available in local bookstores as well as on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
And do you have a website, or do you recommend any web resources for people?
Yes, there's a few resources. Certainly the GoRedForWomen.org from the American Heart Association. Another website that I helped to design along with the people from Bayer Healthcare, because it's a community, it's called conversationsoftheheart2006.com, and it really gives women tips on how to have that conversation with her doctor to make it a lot easier and more comfortable for her to get her information across, as well as to get the life-saving information she may need. And I have a website, totalheartcare.com.
Well, it was great having you on Health Watch.
Thank you.
Today we are talking with Dr. Nisa Goldberg, the author of the Women's Healthy Heart Program. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday morning radio zine.
Radio is proud to co-sponsor the third annual Oregon Queer Youth Conference. The conference is open to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, queer, questioning, and intersex youth and their allies under the age of 23 to get together, discuss the issues, and have a crazy cool time. The conference takes place at the Caitlin Gable School, located at 8825 Southwest Barnes Road, on Saturday, February 25th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, go to www.oqyc.org.
And it's about 10:30, and you're tuned to KBOO Portland. And coming up next, we've got the Dirt Bag. But I need to tell you first that Health Watch has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Food Front Cooperative Grocery, specializing in foods from local and organic producers. Food Front's located in Northwest Portland at 24th and Northwest Thurman. For more information, the number is 503-222-5658. And coming right up is the Dirt Bag. Ted Swenson is the guest today. They're going to be talking about fruit trees. And at 11 o'clock on Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman interviews author Alice Walker for the whole hour.